Evening, folks. Welcome to the latest Trinity Tims podcast. We've been getting quite a lot of publicity here, there, and everywhere, but who cares? Thank you, Adam Eder. You saved the day at Ibrox yesterday. It was a better performance than previously in the last couple of matches, but still short of what we were hoping for. But thankfully, Adam Eder popped up, and despite the best efforts of Dougie Potter on the flag, the man that didn't see Nico Raskin offside in the first half, the man that saw Maeda offside in the second half. We've got Andrew Dallas to thank. Who'd ever have thought you'd have said that? But I think maybe lots of criticism of VAR, lots of criticism of Andrew Dallas, of Alan Muir and others, has maybe shamed them into applying the laws of the game, and they couldn't even come up with squiggly lines to deny Celtic a draw at Ibrox yesterday. So it was a one-each draw. It was a mixed bag. It wasn't the most important game in the world, but it certainly wasn't meaningless. If we'd lost 1-0, it would be a disastrous day. And if Dyson Maeda had knocked the ball right, Johnny Kenny, it would have been a delightful day. So typical, par for the course. That was my brief take on it. What was your overall thoughts on Sunday at Ibrox, Eric?
It was a feeling of deja vu at the start, I thought anyway, because for the first opening 5 to 10 minutes, it seemed to be more of the same and very similar to what we saw in the last three games. I felt that, as usual, Liam Scales was a bit of a bomb scare in the first 10 minutes or so. I felt that he was far too easily muscled off the ball by Cyril Dessers when it came to the goal. But for me, it was a bit of a strange game, because at the start I was turning to my mates in the supporters club and I was kind of saying, what the hell is going on here? Are we just doing the same thing again? How in God's name can Rodgers be approaching this game in the exact same way as he did in the last, you know, three fixtures? So I was a bit confused at the whole start, but then we started to get into the game, and I suppose you have to factor in the lineup. You have to factor in the injuries, and you kind of have to factor in then, was it really worth changing things drastically to accommodate the level of a lineup that we had and the level of a bench that we had? Because I don't think we didn't have very much options really, other than Paulo Bernardo to take off the bench, I felt. And I thought that while we approached it very much similar to what we have done in the last three games, I thought that there wasn't really much choice outside of that for the manager to, he couldn't really approach it any other way. And at the end of the day, it wasn't a game that really mattered much in the broader scheme of things. And we know that Nicholas Kuhn wasn't in because of the fact that, you know, we need him for the cup final. Obviously, Jot has a huge loss. And Alistair Johnston was a big loss, and I said it in an article today that I felt that, you know, we missed the trickery of Jota, because he's a game changer. He could have come on and he could have made a big difference, or he could have started and made a big difference. So his loss after the Dundee United game was huge. But I also felt that that combination of Kuhn and Alistair Johnston, which has been so fruitful down on the right wing, and that interlink play that they have, you know, where Johnston makes those runs and Kuhn plays the ball through to him, we missed that too, because there just really wasn't that communication between James Forrest and Anthony Ralston. While Ralston worked laboriously hard during the game and he played well, I felt, and, you know, he dinked in a few decent balls into the box, there just didn't seem to be that level of connection or communication between him and James Forrest. James Forrest, he seemed incapable of making a decision. He didn't know who to pass it to. He didn't know when to release it. He didn't know when to make a run. And he seemed to know very much how to run into the Ibrox defence. He just wasn't at the races. He wasn't himself. It wasn't like him. And I just felt the combination of him and Ralston, who, to be fair, and to give them credit, they weren't a combination that have played together very often this season. So, you know, to expect them to gel in a fixture like that and to pull it off as well as, say, Nicholas Kuhn and Alistair Johnston would, was a big ask. While I could go all out and just, you know, go in all guns blazing on the manager for not changing things up and for, I suppose, doing the same thing again, I don't think his options were limited. And I just don't feel that changing it up would have made a drastic difference. He kind of, it was shit or bust. He kind of just went for it with what he had. And for me, I was, you know, at halftime, I turned to my mate, Liam, and I said, at the game, I said, look, I think the best we can expect out of this is a draw. And I'd be quite happy with a draw. That was the way I felt about it. And I just, that was fine up until the 97th fucking minute when Dyes and Maeda did what he did. I mean, it was on a plate for Johnny Kenny. And as I said, that was Johnny Kenny's Paul Byrne moment, you know, from all those years back when Paul Byrne had that claim to fame and he scored that goal. And Johnny Kenny was just, he saw that in lights. He just saw, this is my moment. This is my claim to fame. I can go and score the winning goal. And then Maeda thought that he could do it himself. And look, to be fair to Maeda, he's 33 goals in this season. I'm sure he felt he had it in his locker to, you know, to turn Liam Kelly inside out. But Kelly was just flailing all over the place all game. He was throwing hands, legs here, there and everywhere and stopping everything that came at him. So, Maeda, you know, to be fair, Maeda should have known better and he should have squared it. He should have squared it to Johnny Kenny. And if he had done, we'd be having a totally different conversation today. We'd be, you know, we'd have had 3 points in the bag. We'd have won the game. Did we deserve it? On reflection, I wouldn't say we did. I think a draw was a fair result. And that's my view. I don't think we were good enough to win it the way we played. And I think that was just simply down to the fact that we were very restricted by injuries and we didn't have those game-changing players on the pitch. So, yeah, that's my view on it.
Fair enough. James, what's your take on it? So we were down 4 players. I think the guys that came in didn't do themselves any harm at all. Forrest was a bit up and down. Either I'll take a strike at that every day of the week. They've definitely got a good backup goalkeeper. Sinisalo is making a very strong claim. At the very least, he should be playing cup ties next season. And we were down 4, and we didn't quite have Dyson Maeda either. You find out they had a midweek trip to Japan. His expectant wife is still expectant. I don't know if that state of play has changed, but it's not ideal preparation. And he was just a bit short on Sunday. He wasn't quite as dynamic and incisive. So what was your overall take on the game?
That was exactly what I expected it to be. Pretty bog standard end of season game, which had no stakes whatsoever as far as we were concerned. I know that there were a lot of people when they run up to it tried to make it into this big season defining game for us, but it was never going to be that. It's never going to be that. Absolutely ridiculous. The suggestion that our season would be rendered worthless if we'd lost or crap like that was getting talked. I mean, honestly. I mean, I said last weekend when we were talking about predictions for it, I said I had to work out how much I cared. And I stuck to that for the whole week. And I still didn't know how much I cared until I just scored the equaliser yesterday. And then I thought, yeah, okay, good. Now we're going to win this. It was exactly what I expected it to be. And the manager made some good decisions. He's left out AJ. He's left out Kuhn. Although, at a push, he could probably have got both of them into the team yesterday. And he's done that because he's prioritised the cup final, which I think all of us would have done. So I had no complaints about the team selection. I didn't really have any complaints about the performances of any individual players. I thought Engels was having a great game until a point where he stopped looking around and passing the ball properly. I thought that Ida was excellent, and I cannot believe some of that utter rubbish that I was reading about Ida. I knew as soon as Ida missed that chance at the end of the first half that he was going to get crucified on social media if he didn't do something big in the game. Well, thankfully, he did something big in the game, but I thought his performance was excellent up until then anyway. Maeda was a bit quiet on usual way. Now, no, the reason for that. The substitution, taking off Engels for Bernardo, surprised me somewhat because I thought Hatate was the weakest member of the team. But again, that's not to say that he had a terrible performance then. What frustrated me most after it was that we didn't change anything. We didn't change anything in our approach. And if we'd have got beat, the manager would have had some serious questions to answer. Because how much longer we persist in playing this same tactical system and this same setup against them and other teams that have figured out, I don't know. But we're going to pay for it at some point. And I just hope that it's not on the final weekend of the season. But we'll pay for it at some point in a game that matters. And had we paid for it yesterday, well, that's not so much a game that mattered, but Rodgers' winning record against them wouldn't look quite so rosy. And the press would have had an entire summer writing about three defeats in a row. And that would have been on him. I would have blamed him completely for it yesterday. And as I said at the end of the article, or at the end of the game yesterday, I don't think that Adam Agda's goal necessarily is a good enough reason to spare Rodgers some examination, if you like. I just couldn't believe that he's not made any attempt to change the playing system in these games. And as I've said before, we have been playing with a 4-2-3-1 or a formation in that sort of zone for over a decade. And it's about time that we had some tactical flexibility and original thinking there. I can't understand why a guy like Rodgers, who his whole career has been built on tactical flexibility, hasn't he changed the way we play yet? I can't complain too much. On Cup Final Day, I will not look back on this at all. Far less with any regrets. I will not look back on it at all. I'll be forgotten about like that. We win the cup.
Unfortunately, James, it looks like Joe's internet has struck us again.
I see that.
He's back again. just give me a second and I'll sort him out. Hey, Joe, you're back again. Where did you go this time?
I have no idea.
The gremlins he struck again.
There's aliens at play out there.
Definitely. Just give me a second and I'll reach out.
Repeat all that.
Just rejig things there again a bit. No, you're all back in action again.
No, I heard you go on about Adam Agda. I think Adam Agda is a good talking point. It is utterly bonkers, the reaction from some folk. Celtic fans have seen plenty of trap strikers, most of them brought to the club by our current chairman. We've had Patrick Klamala, Albion Ayeti, Bakun Bayo, Mo Bangura. You name it, we've had some absolute belters. Neil Lennon got good at the start when he brought in Stokes and Hooper. Since then, there's been not very many. And then Brendan Rodgers got Dembele and Dembele and Edouard, and also Lee Griffiths, who came in from Ronnie Dyler. But Adam Agda is a damn good striker. We are very fortunate to have him. 19 goals is a great return. And two contributions he's had this season. He took a penalty in the shootout for the League Cup final, and unlike Ridvan Yilmaz, he buried it. And against Young Boys of Bern, Kyogo had three goals disallowed correctly by VAR. Adam Agda came on, Itati stuck a ball through, Agda ran through and goal, the Young Boys defence panicked, and the own goal came from Adam Agda, who then went to Villa Park a few weeks later. He was in a bit of a form slump at the time. The Daily Record will tell you how many minutes in the park he hadn't scored for. I remember he scored 2 in 5 minutes. We are very fortunate to have Adam Agda. I saw someone mention that he hasn't had a pre-season with Celtic. So Adam Agda and Arne Engels with a pre-season should be damn good players next season. They've made great marks this season. If we're missing out on pre-season, Engels came in on transfer deadline day, and he's done very, very well. It's almost difficult to think of a Celtic midfield without Engels in it. So I'll pass to Eric, first of all, for your thoughts on Adam Agda, and why do so many people have a downer on him? Are you looking for a fancy foreign name, a French striker, a Japanese striker? Because his goal record speaks for itself. And if he's in the team sheet, I've got no concerns whatsoever.
Absolutely, Joe. I mean, I said a couple of weeks ago there that, you know, I could see him scoring 20 goals this season. There's no doubt he's going to do that now. And again, I'll reiterate, that's because, you know, he's coming off the bench most of the time. Okay, he's starting out of necessity at the moment and probably will start out of necessity for the rest of the remaining games of the season, which will give him that opportunity to get over 20 goals. But the fact of the matter is, I suppose if you look back on Georges Giakoumakis' first season with Celtic, what did he score at that time, guys? 11, was it? I think in his first
season. 15 or so.
15 or so. Everybody thought he was brilliant. Everybody thought he was an amazing player because at that time we only paid two and a half million for him. Nobody singled him out for criticism because of his price tag. They thought he was excellent. They thought he was brilliant at roughing up defenses. He always created chances. He pulled defenses around the place. He did exactly the same thing that Adam Ida does, except Adam Ida he's getting battered with criticism because he cost 9 million. And what we keep bringing up time and time again, which people don't seem to get, is that is down to Michael Nicholson. All right? That's not down to Adam Ida. Okay? No. And the simple fact is that if we hadn't lowballed Norwich at the start of the transfer window last season, the simple fact is that we would have probably got him for in and around 6.5-7 million. That's the reality. But that's in my view, that's neither here nor there. Because he should not be subject to the level of criticism that he is. He's a big game player. There's no denying that fact now. He's a big game player. He always has a goal in him when it comes to a big game. And he just proved that again yesterday. You know, okay, he missed a chance against Liam Kelly, one-on-one, tried to lift it over the keeper. Another 5-6 inches higher, he probably would have lifted it over him and into the net. It's fine margins. It's always fine margins in situations like that. But the reality of the situation is, this guy is going to finish on 20-plus goals this season. He'll probably score in the cup final. I'm going to go and put it out there now. I'm going to say it, that he's going to score in the cup final. And, you know, people there, Plunge McNugget is saying, you know, we can do better than Adam Ida. 20 goals plus per season from a player who spent the latter half or the early half of the season coming off the bench. That's an excellent return. So I don't know where you're getting the notion that we can do better. And I get the feeling, like James said a couple of weeks ago, he's a 30-goal-plus player if he gets a full season and he gets a good run. I reckon he can definitely do that. So, look, for all his critics out there, my attitude towards that now, just piss off. Because the guy he's proving himself time and time again. I don't know what he has to do. And, look, we all go back to the brace he got against Aston Villa. We all go back to what he did last season, that he scored the winner in the cup final and he scored at Ibrox. He just scored at Ibrox again yesterday. And he seems to be able to, when the pressure's on, and like you said, Joe, even that penalty in the cup final in last December, when the pressure's on, this guy steps up and he does it. You can rely on him, you know? And the fact of the matter was, Daisa Maeda had a gilt-edged chance to put that game away yesterday. He's got 33 goals this season. Yes, we know there's a little side story to that. We understand that now. But the fact of the matter was, he got greedy. He could have just laid it off to Johnny Kenny and we could have won that game. Would Adam Maeda have laid it off to Johnny Kenny? We don't know, and we'll never know. But the fact of the matter is, you know, we have a 33-goal striker. He makes mistakes. He's still a big-game player. He still scores goals in big games, but he makes mistakes, and he made one yesterday. So, you know, I would say at this point, just lay off Adam Ida. There's no more. You just can't. There's no justification in giving the guy a hard time anymore. And he is just about to finish his most prolific season as a striker. He's probably going to get 20-plus goals. I don't think we could ask for much more from the guy, to be honest.
James, passing over to you. Are Celtic fans spoiled? Is there an expectation of perfection? Every striker misses chances. I mean, Henrik Larsson wasn't very good at scoring penalties. Henrik Larsson sometimes went 2 or 3 matches without scoring a goal. So down the course of time, folks seem to have incredible expectations. I'm very happy with Adam Ida. Eric is. Some people aren't. Can you understand? I mean, where's it coming from? What's these folks' issues? A Celtic striker had scored 2 goals at Ibrox. I think yesterday was the first time he started a Glasgow derby. He's got 3 goals, a cup final winner, and 2 at Ibrox. I've got no problem with him. Are expectations ridiculously too high, James?
Do you know what? I wish I could answer that question, because I wish I knew what people expect. I wish I knew what the expectation is. If there is something that he is not doing that a Celtic striker should do, no one has told me what it is yet, because it ain't failing to score goals because he's doing that. Like I said in a piece a couple of weeks ago, that this guy will soon be on 30 goals. He's very close to that now. He's about 3 away from his 30-goal mark. And he's been at Celtic for 16 months. Right, 30 goals in 16 months. If he could have produced that at Norwich, we wouldn't have got near the guy in the first place. This is a guy who's... it's easy to say, right, that he scored twice at Ibrox and he scored at Hampden, right? But let's try and put that in some kind of context, right? The goal he scores at Ibrox, the first one, puts us ahead with a minute to go in a game they need to win to stay top of the, to stay the favourites in the title race. He's got enough composure to score that goal, right? That's an enormous, consequential, season-defining goal, and he's got the cool head to score. The cup final is in the last minute. He's come on as a sub, and he's alert enough to pounce on that loose ball. Every other player on the pitch was half asleep, waiting for extra time. He switched on instantly. Bang, it's in. Right? This is... these are the traits that you look for in a top player. He goes to Villa, as you say, mate, under all sorts of pressure and scores a double in the Champions League against a Premier League side. If Premier League sides didn't know who Adam Ida was before that game, they know who he is now. And on the back of the fact that he scored two massively consequential goals against our rivals, one in a cup final and one in a must-win league game, should have told them everything they need to know about how he handles pressure. He's missed one yesterday. So did Maeda. In almost the same circumstances. But he got his reward. He kept on working and got his reward. And he didn't let his ego go down. I mean, if there is something that I'm missing here, then somebody needs to explain it to me. Somebody needs to tell me what this guy has to do better before he's accepted as the genuine article. Because he looks like the genuine article to me. He doesn't when it counts. I don't know. And his goals for games ratio is pretty damn good for a striker in the modern era. And it's not even so much that, right? The guy has barely started a long run of games. He's not had a sequence of games where he's been the main striker. He thought he was going to get that when Kyogo left, but then Maeda starts slamming in goals every week, right? Which is fair enough. But you can't blame Adam Ida for that. That wasn't a failure on his part. That just so happened that Maeda proved that he was a better option. Oh, Maeda would have been a better option than almost any player at that point. Maeda was scoring goals Kyogo wouldn't have scored at that point. So I don't know how Adam Ida's to blame for suddenly falling out the team again. He's the unluckiest guy in Scottish football, I think, in particular because he's got to carry the weight of a £9 million price tag, which has got nothing to do with him whatsoever. I'll tell you this, though. If he'd have scored those goals in a Norwich shot, that number of goals in a Norwich shot and goals of that consequence in a Norwich shot, 9 million would not have bought you his boots. The Premier League prices. 9 million would not have got you near Adam Ida.
I'll ask you a question, guys. When was the last time that we had a striker that scored 30 plus and then we had a backup striker who scored 20 plus?
I know. It's good, isn't it?
You know, I mean,
we are a bit spoiled at the current time, aren't we? I mean, maybe what it is.
Would you go back as far as Henrik Larsson and Chris Sutton?
No.
The treble in 2001?
Stokes and Hooper would have done that. That was at a time when you played with two strikers. So it's a bit different now when you basically just play with one striker. But when you played with two strikers, you'd have a reasonable expectation that both of them would be over 20. I think Hooper maybe get 30 one season and Stokes getting 20. So I think we are spoiled. And just a bit of podcasting things. Thanks, Tommy55, for mentioning the amount of people watching and liking. So this is a fairly new podcast. It's a weekly podcast. It's been on the go since December. We're over the 1,000 subscribers. Please subscribe, please share, please put comments on. And for the folk that are on live, if you can put a comment on afterwards, hopefully not mention the quality of my broadband, but my disappearing acts. I'll go hiding again. It's appreciated. The feedback's good. And you can follow all three of us with daily blogs all through the week, 7 days a week. So that's enough of the plugging and pushing. What about the downsides from yesterday? I think Liam Scales is is looking as if we've seen the best of Liam Scales last season. He's a good backup guy, but possibly not the man to come in and play alongside Carter Vickers. Carter Vickers sets a hell of a standard in these matches, but I would think, I'm not sure the status of Austin Trusty, but that's an area that Celtic can improve on. And as we've touched on, the bench, when we're down four players, there's not many options for the manager to turn to. So I'll pass to James first for this one. What are your feelings on the squad strength? Jota's injury makes things a bit more direct. We all need to do things, and we need to do things early in the summer. We'll need to have a couple of players in and plenty of time for the Champions League playoffs, which will be around about the 20th of August. So when you looked at that bench, I suppose we've known the board winged it when they sold Kyogo and brought in Jota, a different type of player. It's slightly coming home to roost. The league is won, but there's some serious recruitment work needed sharpish ahead of the summer transfer window. What's your take on those issues, James?
Well, there are a couple of areas. There's a clear need for a lot of work to get done. And what slightly concerns me, I have to admit, is that Jota's injury is a disaster in terms of whatever the summer plan was. I think we needed a third striker, but it would have been more a backup striker. Knew the manager's forced to consider Maeda on the left again. I don't think that's a disaster anyway, because I like watching him on the left, and I think he's been incredibly effective on the left. I will miss the fact that he will not get 40 goals in a season next season if he's played out wide, but he'll still contribute with 15 or 20. I have no doubt whatsoever about that. In a sense, this might be a sort of left-handed gift from the gods, because I think we're now forced to go and spend money on a striker, on a really good top-class striker, which I don't think we would have done. We're sort of almost pushed into a position where we have to now. And there are some good options out there who we've been looking at and we're interested in. Strelick scored a hat-trick at the weekend to win his team a title, so he suddenly looks an interesting player. There's talk about Chris Garden being wanted by the German team or two. We probably have left that late, but that is what happens when you dither and delay and piss about and don't get things done in a timely fashion. When will we ever learn? I don't know. Maybe we won't. But certainly the summer plan is hugely complicated by Jota's injury. I have to say first that I feel terrible for him as a person, not just as a football player, because he's had a terrible 18 months yet. And you could just see he was starting to get his confidence back and his head was up and he was in a good place again. And then this goes and happens. It's sad. It's really sad. I seen he posted some upbeat stuff on social media today, and I hope he keeps his head up and he's back before long. But it changes everything. It changes the plan completely. Rodgers had already said we were still looking for a wide guy. Now we're looking for two of them possibly, but if he moves Maeda wide left, then he gets his guy on the right as he wants, and then we have to sign a striker as well. I think because of the way we play, we could use some variation in the midfield. We still need to sign a midfield hard man, which we've been crying out for about 10 years, and I've been screaming about for about 10 years. And if we finally tackle that issue, that gives us a chance to change up the combination in the middle of the park. And if Rodgers wants to persist with his 4-2-3-1 system, we can play a Mourinho-style one where we've got two holding midfielders in certain games, and that'll give the number 8 or whatever, whether that's going to be Hatate or whether it's going to be Engels or whoever, it gives them the freedom to get to link up the attack. But getting that Iron Man midfielder so we can change the style a wee bit from game to game is an absolute must. And of course we need a backup left back, and I'm torn on this one. I Greg Taylor, I'm grateful for everything Greg Taylor's done, as I'm grateful for everything Liam Scales has done. These two have exceeded expectations. They've been far better players than I ever thought they would be, but we can do better than both of them. And we should be looking to do better than both of them. Austin Trusty must be giving Rodgers headaches. He really must be, because he was brought in to be Carter Vickers' central defensive partner, and everybody else was going to be a backup player. Like, literally everybody else. And Trusty hasn't impressed him, to put it mildly. Was he not like caught on a sort of moment during a game where he had criticised Trusty for being weak for a goal we conceded? I'm fairly sure that happened. And Trusty obviously isn't as good at taking the ball forward as Scales is. That's why I like Scales, because Scales progresses the attack, whereas Trusty tends not to do that. So Trusty must be giving the guy mega headaches, because he's not the big physically imposing player. Although he's big and he's got physicality, he's not as imposing as Rodgers hoped he would be, and he is not as good on the ball going forward as Rodgers hoped he would be. These things you might be able to fix, though. Proper pre-season, Rodgers will teach him a few new tricks. You might see a different player next season. I'm not going to write the guy off. I'm not going to write £6 million off. I think he's looked, in certain games, he's looked excellent. And you could see why that was the central defensive partnership the manager wanted. But I think we could let go Scales and not really miss him. We could let go Taylor and not really miss him. I still have a sneaky feeling Hitati will go in the summer. We've got mixed feelings. Always have got mixed feelings on that. But it's looking like a bigger rebuilding job than it should have been. And there's two reasons for that. The first, that we failed to sign Kyogo's replacement in January, which was a calamity, because that just pushed that forward into the summer and it didn't need to. It should never have been an issue for the summer. And new Jota's injury complicates that situation, and we're now looking for three players at the top end of the pitch when we could have done without that decision. My God. Because there are other areas of the pitch that need reinforcing, and now we've got to sign three at the top end. That's mad. It's a bad position to be in. But we can go on all night blaming the board for no signing a replacement for Kyogo. But the Jota injury is just one of those things, man. Out from the blue. Terrible, terrible situation. And nobody's fault. My first reaction was to be angry, but then I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, who am I angry at? Why? I mean, it's not like he got a bad tackle. It's not like, you know what I mean, something happened on the pitch where you're like, well, either the referee didn't stop the game in time or the trainer didn't come on in time. Just one of the things. It's one of those things in football. Nothing you can do about it. But it's a sickener. And it changes the plan quite a lot.
James, some people might say it wasn't a wise idea for Jota to take part in the post-match celebrations. With a cruciate injury, 6-9 months, I think it would be better.
We didn't know what the size of the problem was. We didn't know what the scale of the problem was. Had Jota knocked him out and took part in the celebrations, that would have just led to a week of speculation about how bad the injury was, and the injury's turned out to be bad. But I don't know. I don't think that would have complicated things any. It's just one of the things. Just one of the things. Happens in football, and you just need to get on with it. And we're facing a big decision.
Injuries happen, but I would, with the way the injury turned out, to find out it was that bad, I would have erred on the side of caution, just told Jota, just watch the celebrations on the telly and get the bus home. Yeah. We'll get you in the hospital, but it's water under the bridge now. Eric, what's your take on the way things are shaping up? The double whammy of not getting the striker in January and then having Jota out injured. And I think there's a few comments there. I think Celtic have been quite keen to sell Nicholas Kuhn in the summer. I think that's going to be shelved. That would be ridiculously high risk. So what's your take on where things stand?
Can I turn on that for a second?
On you go.
this is where you have to be ruthless, and this is where you have to be cold-blooded about this. We are not a phenomenally wealthy club by comparison to the clubs in Europe. We are operating under financial sustainability regulations, which are much harsher on us than they are on clubs elsewhere who have got £80 million TV deals. If a significantly big offer comes in for Nicholas Kuhn, and we are looking at a rebuilding job where we have to sign 4 or 5 or 6 players, there's an argument for saying we should take the money and see what we can do with it. And I won't argue with it.
The tricky bit in that is seeing what we do with it, because we know our recruitment over any length of time you care to examine is not very good. There's a few great signings, there's a few bargains that turn out to be superstars, but over the piece, there's a lot of dodgy signings. That's why we've got Lewis Palmer coming back. That's why some folk are trying to talk up Marco Tilio turning it on for Melbourne City. And Yang isn't as bad as he was, but he's not somebody that you'd want to be starting 4 or 5 worthwhile matches. So he's doing better, but I think it might be like a few others. Put him in the shop window. He's done a bit better, and maybe get something back on him. But I'll pass over to Eric. What's your take on the state of play, the squad strength, and the priorities for the summer transfer window?
Yeah, well, I'd echo what James said. I mean, we've probably been forced into a bit of a rebuild based on what's happened. But I sent a message to James straight after, you know, the extent of Jota's injury was released, you know, and how long he was going to be out for. And I said, there's an element of karma about this. We discussed this last January after Kyogo had been sold. And we said that what are we going to do if some of our front players end up having serious injuries. And we felt at that time that the board was totally underprepared for a situation like that by not bringing in a backup striker. And look, as James said, it's nobody's fault that this has happened. It's a freak incident. It's just one of those things that happens. But the simple fact of the matter is we weren't prepared for it. We didn't have the backup in place if something like that happened. And now we've been forced into a scenario where we may possibly have to buy a couple of wingers, and we are definitely going to have to get a striker in. We have no idea whether it's going to be short-term 6 months, long-term 9 months for Jota, and how long he's going to be out. So we just can't factor him into plans for next season because we just don't know exactly how long it's going to be before he's back and available to play. So that gives the board a conundrum. They have to... they also... If I link in with what James said about Nicholas Kuhn, if a big offer comes in for him, I'd be inclined to agree with what James is saying that, you know, we can't. Well, look, this board has previous. They're not gonna shirk off a big offer anyway. So if that offer comes in, we can pretty much consider him gone. And I won't even dwell on that, because if it does come in, they let him go. But they still need to get adequate replacements in. And we definitely need a backup striker, and Johnny Kenny's not it. Johnny Kenny has clearly not proven that he is good enough to step into the role. Look, it's not his fault he didn't score yesterday. Maeda didn't place the ball to him. He probably would have slotted it away had he done that. But I just don't think he's obviously proved enough in training that he's the backup striker, you know, that he's the next guy in line. Because Rodgers hasn't relied on him. So we have to get that striker. We have to get a winger or two. We have to get that defensive midfielder. And I mean, we, same as James, we've been harping on about that for a long, long time. And we have never adequately replaced Scott Brown. We just don't have an enforcer like him. We haven't had an enforcer like him. I mean, we can even go back as far as, what's his name? Abelgaard. People were saying at that time that he was a midfield enforcer, and that if he came in, he could do the same job as Scott Brown. He didn't. He was a failure. He didn't really feature at all. Engels, he's a different kind of midfielder. He's not an enforcer. I think a lot of people were, you know, I saw comments there saying that Engels hasn't, you know, in my own article that I put out today, saying that Engels isn't good enough. he's been more than good enough. He's had a very good season. He's not your midfield general. He's not a midfield enforcer. But I mean, he was mixing it well with Raskin yesterday, once again proving that he is a better player than Raskin. The only thing that made Raskin look good was that we fucking nearly gave him the opportunity to score a goal from ahead again. You know, and that was about the only thing that he did all day long that made him look any bit good. And we're lucky that we got away with that one. Well, we're not lucky. It was offside. There's no two ways about it. But so with regards to the defence side of it, it's like James said. I mean, Austin Trusty's obviously giving Brendan Rodgers a serious headache. We forked out $6 million on the guy. It's been fits and starts with him. He's had great games. We all go back to the Atalanta game and we'll say he had a blinder. He played a blinder that night. But Scales isn't the answer. As much and all, you know, being Irish myself and any Irish player that I see playing for Celtic, I want to do well. I've plugged Adam Ida all season. But there's a big difference. Adam Ida has delivered. Liam Scales you kind of pointed out where he does go forward. He gives us that option. But when he goes forward, he just runs into a roadblock sometimes. And he did that yesterday at Ibrox. He ran forward and he was dispossessed. And you're just not at ease when he's on the ball. You know what I mean? And when he's bringing it forward, you're just kind of saying to yourself, oh, what the fuck is he going to do next? And look, when you consider where he came from, you know, and he went out on loan to Aberdeen, did a good job at Aberdeen. We'll never forget him for that goal that he scored against the Ibrox side at Pittodrie. He came back and he was thrown in at the deep end at Ibrox at the start of Rodgers' second stint. And I think just out of necessity, he won the position, or he put himself well in contention for that position. But I think we've moved on a bit and left him behind a bit. That's what I feel. So is it down to Rodgers getting another central defender in, somebody who he feels can partner CCV well enough? I don't know. Are we looking at Austin Trusty getting a good preseason and him slotting in there with CCV when the time comes? I don't feel it would be any harm for us to bring in another central defender, I'll put it that way. So if I was to look at it in the overall scheme of things, I think it wouldn't be, you know, it'd be no problem for us, you know, if we brought in another one and just had him in there. I think we definitely need that midfield general. And now we're at a point where we need possibly two wingers and another striker. So yes, you're talking the guts of five players and you're talking a semi-rebuild, if you want to look at it from that perspective. And we should never have been in this position. That's my point of view. We had a few discussions about it in the early stages of the podcast when we just started out. And we were almost saying at that time that we had an embarrassment of riches. You know, we had a great bench. We had a good second squad. And then it just all seemed to come apart at the seams in the January transfer window. It just, between injuries, between the sale of Kyogo, and what happened thereafter. And now we find ourselves in a position where we possibly need 4 to 5 players in the transfer window. Will the board deliver? Will they leave us all scratching our heads and tearing our hair out? That's what I expect. You know, it's like I said to James the other day, there's an old guy in the local that I go into, and what he says very much reminds me of the philosophy that I sometimes have about Celtic. I go into the local and I say, how's it going, Jim? And he just looks at me and he says, Asher, we're overground. Anything after that is a bonus. that's it with Celtic. You know, you have to think the worst when it comes to the transfer window, and anything after that's a bonus. You know, so that's my view on it, Joe. I'm not going to hold out any hope that the board is going to give us massive faith in what they're going to do. I'm sure Brendan Rodgers is going to be pushing the living hell out of them to do it, but whether they will or not, whether Silent Mike will be silent throughout the transfer window, well, that remains to be seen, I guess.
That's interesting. I reckon in the autumn when we were flying, when we were at our best, we had about 15, 16, maybe 17 players. But when you start to lose a few, the guys that are coming onto the bench, they're untested. Sean McArdle was on the bench yesterday. He's not been on the bench before. And yet, there's been a couple other younger guys. The boy from Belfast that was on the bench came on against Francis something or other. I should be doing better homework for this. He came on against Curley, yeah, at the start of the season, away to St Mirren, and then there's a Dundee home match. Someone came on for 15 minutes, but they weren't involved in the squad yesterday. It was McArdle. So there's clearly lots of work to be done. We're all cynics, we're all sceptics. Maybe one day we'll be shocked. But anyway, moving on to one other issue. We've been getting a little bit of traction, a bit of fame. But particularly James, I have to say. So for all those lurkers that have been waiting through this, for now, we've had 45 minutes or so, and we haven't mentioned the second best club in Scotland, the 2012 Tribute Act formed by Charles Green, a club that's won as many honours as St Johnstone in its long history of 13 years. So there's a few issues at Ibrox on Sunday, James. As expected, old-fashioned media are getting all excited and full outrage over a banner, a tifo. The banner tifo, as far as I'm concerned, is fairly minor and compared to the real rap sheet that you could come up with. I think it was straight from the first whistle, it was straight into the Billy Boys. That appeared quite a few times in between No Pope of Rome and some of their other horrid favourites. As expected, not a peep of complaint or apology from Ian Crocker and the lads at Sky as he drooled over the Old Firm nonsense that none of us weren't associated with. So there's quite a few issues. So the songs, the bottle getting thrown on, that was quite spectacular. One of their cropped subs, he managed to nip on and get it all out of harm's way, but he was caught by Sky. So congratulations to Sky. I'll give you the credit for that, showing that incident, which might have escaped most of us. But one factor from that Michael Nicholson might note is when a glass bottle is thrown onto a grass football pitch, it doesn't smash into lots of tiny pieces. It just doesn't happen. When you throw a glass bottle onto a football park, it stays as a glass bottle. It stays in one piece. We've got evidence last April when a half bottle of Buckfast was thrown at Matt O'Reilly after he scored a penalty. That bottle didn't smash into lots of pieces. And again yesterday, a Buckfast bottle was thrown from the same area of the ground. I think the Union Bears are in there now. So our players routinely have bottles thrown towards them. Sinisalo was pictured taking a vape off, and who knows what other missiles were there. So what was your take on the events off the park yesterday, James? Is the TIFO a big issue for you, or is there other issues that should be getting dealt with by the authorities? We know that Michael Nicholson will be on mute. He's just delighted to get his Old Firm back again. He's looking forward to going to Ibrox at the start of next season, and then all the marketing for the Nerf Day game at Celtic Park. So over to you, James. What was your rap sheet? And give a shout out to all your new followers. Don't forget them.
On the TIFO, right, there was one last season. Was it last season? The Gangs of New York racist TIFO, which went largely unremarked upon. There are some of the things that they have put up. They are the football hooligans, based on the shitty early 2000s video game, which I recognised instantaneously the second I saw it. I was a fan of that particular video game. A lot of it has gone kind of unremarked upon and ignored. You're right, Joe, there was a much larger issue yesterday than the TIFO, and it's the same issue we've highlighted again and again and again and again and again, is that Ibrox is just not a safe ground for us to visit. It's not safe for our players, it's not safe for our fans, it's not safe for our coaching staff. And I found it incredible that certain people, Tom English, naming you straight away, decided to get in a tizzy about the TIFO, but only after the club had condemned it. Only after the club had condemned it. Because the same newspapers that were echoing the club's condemnation this afternoon had also posted pictures of it yesterday without a comment on it, when the wording of it was crystal clear and the inference was crystal clear. On the TIFO itself, I really only have one observation to make and really only one question to ask. Why, out of all the images in the world, they went with a naked Graeme Souness that looked as if it belonged on the front of a gay men's porn magazine? I don't know if we should be joining this up with the gimp masks and stuff and making some summarizations about the Union Brats. But it was very strange for that reason. I looked at it and I thought, that just doesn't look like it belongs there at all. Unless they're trying to send us a subliminal message about themselves. Maybe they are. I don't know. But, I mean, the word on it made it perfectly clear. This is a guy, even if he is naked, this is a guy with a shotgun pointed at our fans. And a very clear message. And the only outrage in the media came after the club had released a statement condemning it. So it wasn't worthy of condemnation before the club gave them permission to complain and condemn. That's what pisses me off. That's what annoys me. It's not even a double standard. It's just fucked. It's what we have to put up with. And it's what we've always had to put up with. It's just bizarre. It's bizarre. And, of course, the club's own motivation in releasing a statement and condemning it has got a very queer origin. And that's in the Americans and whatever their plans are. And whether or not they have got some misgivings about investing in an organisation which has customers such as these, it must be disturbing for them. You know what I mean? Coming from the most liberal state in the US and the most liberal city in that state, to actually witness that and be like, these are our customers. These are our potential season ticket holders. That must be really disconcerting. And if they've got serious misgivings, I would not blame them one bit. And that's the only reason that the club, which has tolerated all manner of stuff in the past, that's the only reason that they've even bothered to comment on it. And everybody knows this. And everybody in the media especially is playing along with this idea that, oh, the club's taking a stand and this is good and this is positive. They never took a stand for years before it. If the takeover collapses tomorrow and the Americans walk away, that's the last you will ever hear about their elevating the discourse and trying to make their club into a better place and whatever else. It's the last you'll hear of it. So no one should be convinced by it because it's all fake. It's all phony. All this outrage all of a sudden, it's just bollocks. Every single week for as long as I've been following Celtic, the same bile has been getting poured out the Ibrox stands. And the media doesn't care. And the club doesn't care. And all of a sudden, because of some American money getting flashed around, suddenly the club does care, suddenly the media does care, and suddenly this is a cancel that has to be eliminated from the game. I wish they believed it, but they don't believe it. None of them believe it.
Well said, James. I just had a brain flash. Jude Bonner and Francis Turley, that's the two young guys that played a few minutes. So if they rack my brains, it's a bit of a shame that they don't stand out, but they have made first team appearances for Celtic this season. But looking over that issue and back onto the issues at Ibrox, it's very telling that they don't put the statement on their own website. They release it to all their media partners. So anyone doing a search on their own website, nothing to worry about. No comment about the bottle, the vapes, or the TIFO from Sunday's match. We all know the media, our legacy media, are all over social media. We really ought to have a little look at the backlash from their supporters. Patrick Stewart is getting it tight, it's fair to say. I think the most polite description I've read about him is he's a woke, wet wipe. So, hey. Patrick Stewart is a woke, wet wipe. Eyes of the gammon, red-blooded bears. Who want their traditions but don't like to spell it exactly what their traditions are. So, Eric, what's your take from looking over from Ireland on this Scottish issue? The media love to dance along to, flirt with, but we'll never ever tackle, we'll never ever discuss. I just like to pair things up. What was your view of the events and the aftermath from Ibrox on Sunday?
Well, before I get into that, I have to commend the Tannoy at Ibrox for, you know, playing simply the best for the best team in Scotland. I really, really, really appreciate that. They blared it out. Our fans loved it and got stuck in and sang it like, you know, they sang their heart's content that they're, you know, that we're simply the best. And that's
the reality. Do you know what? For a long time, I have wondered why they don't actually, they don't listen to the song. The song has never been "We Are Simply the Best." It's "You're Simply the Best." So the song literally was for us yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. We took it on board. You know, I have to say, out of all the things they did yesterday wrong, they did that right. I'll give that to them, you know. And then I'll follow up that by the banner that they had in the Onion Bears end where they said "Seasons of Beatings to be continued." Absolutely. Absolutely. These seasons of beatings will be continued for as long as needs be. They'll be continued. I wrote an article the other day there where I kind of said we needed more competition and that I felt we needed to be pushed more and that Brendan Rodgers as a manager would want to be pushed more. And I sort of hinted that maybe they being taken over by the Americans might push us more and Brendan Rodgers might rise to that challenge. But I take all that back. I take it all back after yesterday. Seasons of beatings. That's all I want. Every season, treble after treble, I don't care anymore. I don't want the challenge to come out of there. I would prefer if Aberdeen, Hibs, or any other side challenged us. I just want to stand on their neck and keep them down. That's all I want to do after yesterday. So I've got that out. With regards to the TIFO, when I first saw it, I asked who's the stroke victim in the TIFO, because if that was meant to be Graeme Souness, it looked like he had a serious stroke anyway. For starters, because the artist, I mean, they seriously need to get a better artist anyway. That's what they need to do, because that just looked chronic. With regards to the message in it, coming from Ireland, it's nothing new. It's just, I mean, they always sing about being up to our knees and blood pointing shotguns at us. I mean, what difference does that make? They're all talking, no fucking action. That's the reality. You know, they're full of shit. It's all this bluster, this bravado that makes them look like complete and utter fucking twats. And all they have done, see that shotgun that they had pointing at us? They shot that at their fucking foot yesterday when it comes to the Americans. Because they literally, they wanted to give an impression, as James said, to the most liberal state in America, that this is this is their customer base. Did anybody notice that the Americans were kind of conspicuous by their, they were absent yesterday? Was it because they didn't want to be associated with what went on there yesterday? Because
the media wanted to interview them yesterday, did they?
Yeah. Like, it's just, I don't know. Like, that club just has the ability to self-destruct on a hilarious level. And they did it yesterday. And what James said there about their board and their mealy-mouthed statement afterwards, that's all just, it's all show for the Americans. Oh, we care about this stuff so much. Oh, we care about the fact that our fans behave like this and we condemn it. I mean, it's bullshit. It's just like, this has gone on. I'm 40 years supporting Celtic, and this shit has been going on for as long as I can remember. It's been going on ad nauseum for as long as I can remember. And the fact that they're speaking out about it now, every one of those directors that was in that director's box yesterday at Ibrox is shitting their pants that the Yanks are going to pull out. Andrew Kavanagh is an Irish-American. I don't know if he's Catholic. I don't know what religion or faith the guy is. He is an Irish-American. And that man he's either brain dead or he must be having serious second thoughts about taking over that club. Because the fact of the matter is, those people hate you, Andrew Kavanagh. They absolutely hate what you are, where you came from, and if you're a Catholic, they absolutely hate that too. So there's no more to be said about it. It was an exercise in self-destruction yesterday. That's what they did. And I would be very, very, shocked if there isn't repercussions from that in this takeover now. That's my take on it. I feel what they did yesterday, they just shot themselves in the foot. That's it.
Unlike
I said this the last time we were talking about after the UEFA banner, and we talked about this stuff. And it's clear that the message the club was sending didn't get through. It's clear what we were saying. And since they all listened to us, hi guys, it hasn't got through either. So let me say it again, just in case they missed it. In order for any takeover to be a success, based on the current structure of the club, they will have to either cut costs massively or load the debt onto the club itself. The only other way that club makes money, proper money, and expands in the manner that it would need to, is if the Billy Boys Brigade are completely removed from the stands and from having anything to do with the club. Anything to do with it. Now, the Americans will not need convincing of that. They already will have some idea that they are buying what one of Rangers' former directors, Hugh Adam, called a provincial West of Scotland football club with a very limited, larger appeal in the wider world. They will already be somewhat aware of that if they're any good at what they do at all. And so they'll know that the only way to make that money back in any meaningful sense is to grow the customer base and develop it. And they will never do that while that club is in thrall to those fucking Neanderthals. And so when you say that that shotgun was aimed at themselves yesterday and that they pulled the trigger, that's exactly what they did do. You guys still don't get it yet. It's your own club you have to worry about. Your own club is coming after you now. You're making it come after you. You're giving it no choice. And whether it's the current board of directors who tries to remove you because that's the only way they'll ever sell their shares, or whether it's the guys who buy those shares who have to remove you because it's the only way they get a return on their investment, you are already gone. You're already gone. And I would help you out and provide you with the shovels because all you're doing is digging your own grave. So keep it up. Best of luck.
Yep. Yeah, but James, don't forget, we're hurting. You know, when we go up on Twitter again, when we go up on all of their feeds on Twitter, we're hurting. You know, this whole takeover is killing us. We're shitting our pants with what's coming down the line. Yeah, right, lads. Dream on. Dream on.
Right, boys, shut up. unlike Sky Sports, I would like to apologise for the sweary words from James and Eric. It's absolutely outrageous. There's no place for it. There's no need for it. You're both expressive lads. You can express your anger for that horrible, rancid, vile, manky, horrible, whatever mob without having to resort to swearies. And as a reminder, once again, there is absolutely no takeover. There is nothing happening. Dave King has found a guy called Andrew Kavanagh who might be buying his shares, and that's about it. To get a 51% stake in that horrible club, you'd need to buy out the six largest shareholders, and still nobody will have a word with Douglas Park. Douglas Park and his boy were at the match yesterday. They were sitting in the director's box. Andrew Kavanagh wasn't there. Neither were the other takeover lads. So nothing's happening. It'll be another week of nothingness when they come up on Tuesday for a walkabout, and it seems that they've been anywhere. They were down in Plymouth on Saturday for Leeds winning promotion, winning the title, and Leeds had a walkabout and tour of the city for finishing top of the second division in England. So there is nothing happening on that front. Don't worry yourself. Eric and James tend to get quite excited and go into some depth. It's just not happening. And the clue came on the 19th of February when top takeover expert, business specialist, Keith Jackson of the Daily Record broke the world exclusive. At that stage, talks had began in October, and it escaped Keith Jackson's attention from October, November, December, January, and then the day after Celtic played Bayern Munich, there was a takeover happening. Talks were then at an advanced stage, and if I check my calendar, we're now on to the 5th of May, and nothing's really happened. So I'll wrap up at that. I'll pass over for... I'll give James the second last word, and then Eric the last word, and then you can like, share, and for all the lads over at Follow and other cesspits, fire away, keep on laughing at us. We know our biggest threat comes from our club chairman. It doesn't come from Ibrox. It doesn't come from the San Francisco 49ers. It doesn't come from 49ers Enterprises, etc. So, James, second last word, keep it sweet, and then we'll pass to Eric, and then we can go off and do other things tonight.
Well, I just want to say to the Twitter Twatty Brigade before they start that I have said right from the start, that I believe some version of this will happen. Some version of it will happen. Guys, for the hard of hearing, the hard of thinking, I have said it from the start. Some version of this will happen. But that version will bear no resemblance to the fairy tale in your mind. None whatsoever. This time next year, we will be back on here celebrating 5 in a row. And you guys will have gone through at least one more manager. And you'll be midway to the point where you're trying to get rid of another board. Except these guys will live in a gated community far, 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 far away. So you can't even protest them like you did the BBC. You're in a lot of trouble and you don't even know it.
Thanks, James. Over to Eric for the final word and then we'll be off, Ski.
I have to echo what Eugene Richie just said there. The Ark family, Roman Catholic millionaires. That's it. That's what's taking over your club, guys. That's what's going on.
The Nike logs are coming.
Yeah, those guys that you want to run a mile from, they're coming in and they're taking over. Yep. And they're not going to shower millions upon you. Believe me when I say that.
There are okay. Some documentaries that you could watch on YouTube if you want a sense of what this might look like. The ones about the Glazers at Manchester United. Go and have a look at those American billionaires who came in and only cared about the bottom line and only cared about posting profits and only cared about how much they could get back. So, there you go. Recommendation.
Okay, right. James again. James get the last word again, so we'll need to head off now. That's all from us. We'll be back again next Sunday or Monday, around about the same sort of time. Thanks for looking in. Thanks for sharing. And don't forget, lads, only one Scottish team has won 55 titles. Adios.
See you later, guys.
Hail, guys.